This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Merry Christmas, Andre.
Merry Christmas.
And Happy New Year.
It's just, well, Christmas is coming up in just, what, a few days.
Yeah, exactly. This is our holiday show.
Yes.
And we're doing a little preemptive New Year's show here because we figured that next week we'll be talking about what we're looking forward to seeing in 2026. So this week we're going to be talking about winners and losers.
Exactly, because it's been a very eventful year, a very exciting year. We've done a lot. We've driven across country, what, many times this year.
Well, you have.
In hurricanes.
Yeah, I drove across country in a Bentley.
Wow, that's cool.
As you know, normally I'm on the car podcast, but Case is racing, drag racing Tommy today. He's got our newly acquired Porsche 997 that he's racing against Tommy's Aston Martin Vantage. Those two cars directly compete, and so they're up at the racetrack, so I'm kind of standing in for him.
Well, great. I'm excited to see the drag race.
Yeah, me too, because those cars directly competed. But we're here to talk about trucks.
By the way, segue.
Yeah?
You talked about drag races.
Yeah?
We've done so many drag races this year with trucks. And also, we started something new that we wanted to do for a very long time. We drag raced trailers. You know, trucks with trailers.
Yes.
We called it the tow-off.
Yes. And we're going to be talking about that when we get to winners.
Yes.
So let's save that. But there's even bigger news that we need to share with you all, and that is the TFL Truck of the Year. As you've been watching all our videos, we have now gotten to the end of the TFL testing.
Yes.
Andre, you and Case did an exceptional job. I'm really excited to watch those videos, and I'm really excited to find out what the TFL Truck of the Year is. So if you're listening to this today, then you'll have to wait till Saturday to
tomorrow.
Find out. But if you're watching this or listening to it on YouTube tomorrow, then you'll know. So we won't spill the beans on what the TFL Truck of the Year is, but tell me kind of what you did and how we're going to pick the, or how you and Case are going to pick the winner for the Truck of the Year.
Well, this is for 2026, and we're really, really focused on the full-size segment, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it'd be kind of weird, and we've never done this. We've never combined in one competition trucks from different classes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we never compared a Maverick to a Super Duty before as far as Truck of the Year
is
concerned.
It's like oil and vinegar.
Yeah, so we want to focus on a class. We focused on full-size half-tons. And so this was a GM 1500. This was a GMC Sierra in this case. We had a Ram 1500. We had a Toyota Tundra and a Ford F-150, of course.
So you had all the full-size trucks?
All of them.
All the half-tons.
The Nissan Titan is no more, so unfortunately we cannot include it in this particular one. But then we did several tests, and we wanted to remove our opinion as much as possible out of it.
Yeah, so you wanted to make it objective, not subjective.
Yes, so we really wanted to be numbers, data-driven, real-world driven. So we did a Knight Gauntlet, World's Toughest Towing Test. We did a Denver 100 MPG loop. And then we also did the drag race with all of these trucks. And we've published, you could see some of these videos already. You can go to TFL Truck YouTube channel, and you could see it right there.
And then you assign points based on how they did.
Exactly.
That is some comprehensive testing. And I want to thank all the manufacturers for sending trucks.
That was a big lift.
And getting all those trucks for a period of almost 2 weeks because it took a long time. And I have to kind of blow our own horn here, Andre. A lot of publications pick cars of the year. There's all these top 10, top 50 lists, but very few of them do such comprehensive testing where we've actually, with the Ike, of course, you're doing towing testing. With the Denver 100, you're doing fuel economy, which is huge if you're using this as the biggest tool in your toolbox. And with the drag races, you're doing performance testing. So you combine all the three of those, you assign points, and you get an objective number and an objective winner as opposed to, you know, us picking the truck that we like the most based on, you know, our testing.
Color or something else.
Yeah, and that's a kind of the TFL way. And it's hard to do because the manufacturers don't necessarily love what they would call...
direct competition. I mean,
they don't like direct competition.
So, well, because they're not controlling it, right?
Yeah, one's going to lose, one's going to win, yeah. Right? So the chances are you may not. They don't like that, and they don't like instrument testing because once again, you're putting stuff up against a clock in this case,
against the fuel pump or something.
Fuel
like
pump,
that,
yeah. Or how many brake applications you have, and that's where the tire hits the road, and so. Sometimes it's hard for us to get them to agree. So that's why I'm thanking all of them for doing that because, you know, we put all these trucks through a battery of tests and we're going to find out which one of those trucks came out on top. I can't wait. And I don't know what the winner is because you and Case have done the numbers. So we are publishing, or you're publishing, a video over at TFL Truck tomorrow, basically summarizing all the testing and then picking, the winner.
Yes, there's going to be fireworks. Ian, our producer, Ian, promised fireworks.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's been working hard.
Actually, he didn't promise that.
He's been working hard at editing that. So, I'm excited, Andre, and I hope that you guys like it, because if you like it, then next year we'll pick a different segment. I'm thinking mid-sized trucks, and we'll do the same thing if we can get the manufacturers to provide the trucks and if we can get you guys on board. So, you know, please go watch it. Please comment on it, and the more successful it is, you know, the more likely we'll be able to repeat it next year.
And also next year, just kind of a hint towards the end of this episode, is I'm expecting next year to be just insane, especially maybe the later half of next year, because there's a lot of rumors about heavy-duty trucks, you know, getting some updates, even from General Motors and some others, and... there's a rumor of a TRX coming back. So next year is going to be crazy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. And so when you come back next time, we'll be talking about the trucks that we're looking forward to driving and seeing in 2026. So shall we get on with the winners and the losers? But before we do that, Andre, I have an idea for you.
What's that?
All right. So I was reviewing the Infiniti QX60.
Yes.
Yesterday I was doing this just in, which is basically when the manufacturer sends us a truck. So we do our vehicle, in this case an SUV. We kind of do a first impression review of it and publish it to TFL Now. And I noticed that it had a towing package.
Really? No way.
Yeah. It had a towing package. It tows 66,000 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, no brake controller.
66,000 pounds?
6,000. Yeah, 66,000.
Wow, it's like a semi-truck.
Holy crap. Infiniti is really crushing it. 6,000 pounds.
Yes.
And I was thinking to myself, and Ian actually, that we've pretty much iked every traditional truck there is to ike. Can you think of a truck we haven't iked?
And also we've iked every pickup truck with every engine.
Yes.
That's available.
Yeah, so we're kind of running out of trucks to ike. And then, of course, we're the only ones that are actually doing this kind of tow testing in a regular basis over time. And so since we've done all the trucks with all the engines, I thought it'd be a good idea to actually do SUVs now, or let's call them big crossover, three-row SUVs, three-row crossovers. And in the past when we've done that, as you know, it hasn't exactly broken the needle in terms of how many people watch.
Well, Cole, can you pull up a car channel, TFL Car? And we did the Honda Passport Ike recently.
They did well, yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting, actually.
There it goes.
And the Passport actually crushed it, dude.
Yeah.
Did really well on the iGauntlet.
And thank you for Honda for giving us a long-term loan. Because to do all this testing, it's hard to do in a week, which is how long we usually get the cars for. Anyway, I was thinking to myself, people use three-row SUVs, especially the body-on-frame SUVs. You know, the big ones like Armada, if you're in the Nissan world, or Tahoe, Yukon, all those, Suburban. Or if you're in Infiniti, the QX60 with the 6,000 pound towing package.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, we should also do tow testing on these, because I think there's not a huge percentage of you guys out there towing, but you know, if you buy a three row, the chances are you may be towing a horse trailer, or you may be towing a side by side, or you may be towing a boat with it. It's kind of the next step down if you're not getting a truck. But there's a but. So I was talking to Ian about this, and the but is that doing an Ike takes a lot of time and effort. And as you know, if you've been listening to us or some of the other YouTubers, the YouTube model is changing, and the amount of work that we can put into any video and get a decent ROI is getting harder and harder to accomplish. And so when we go and do an Ike, it's a big, heavy lift. It takes a lot of videographers. It takes a lot of editing power. It takes a lot of just a lot of money to do these kinds of tests. And so I thought to myself, I'm not sure that there's enough interest to be Iking, let's call it the Infiniti QX60. I just don't know if there's enough people buying it that they would be interested in having it go up to the world's toughest towing test.
So why did you bring this up?
Because I came up with a new test.
Whoa.
Me and Ian actually came up with a new test.
Let me guess. This is going to be the El Dorado Ike.
No. We came up with a new test. So in the summer, what's the other test that we do?
The toaster.
The toaster.
TFL toaster test, which is a slow-moving, really, really hot test.
Yeah, so the idea is you hook up a truck and then you go up a very steep grade, and luckily that grade is not far from here, so we don't have to go all the way to Silverthorne. So whenever we do an Ike, that's a whole day. And if we're doing two trucks at a time, you're way into the evening. But this one, luckily, is very close to here, so you can hook up a trailer, go to the ranch, hook up a trailer, load it up, and then go up and down the toaster in a day, or maybe less than a day, to actually get a pretty interesting video on it.
Yeah, maybe 3-4 hours you can do it.
Yeah, so here's the idea. It's a good test, not because it only overheats the truck or can't overheat the truck, but it's also a very steep grade. And so it gives you a sense of how well the truck can A, tow up the grade, and how well or not it can handle the load going down the grade. So I thought, let's do a winter toaster and call it, are you ready for this, guys? Three SUVs, the freezer.
The freezer?
Exactly. The freezer. So okay. In the summer, we do the toaster.
Okay.
And in the winter, we do the freezer.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
That is amazing.
This is your first reaction. This is the first time you've heard of it. So we'll see what Andre thinks.
I was thinking, I did not see the freezer coming, even though it is, well,
70 degrees out today.
70 degrees in December.
And no power in Boulder because of the winds.
Yeah, but it is also called the Sunshine Canyon. Mm. You know, that road.
Yeah.
So why not call it the Sunshine Toaster?
Because it's not a toaster. It's a winter thing. Okay, it's a freezer. We do it in the winter, and we do it with three-row SUVs.
Well, what happens when it's summer?
Then we do the toaster.
Just switch the toaster?
Yes, of course.
All right, you heard it here first. So if you're interested in this test, you have to search for two words, either freezer or toaster.
Yeah, in the summer, it's a toaster. In the winter, it's the freezer.
It's all about the kitchen, really.
Yeah, and we take up three-row SUVs. And first one I thought we could do is that Infiniti. Well, we have
That's
it.
Cool, yeah.
Would you be up for doing that?
Yes, I would.
All right, well, stay tuned for the freezer.
I would. I want to thank Matt Zidro. He's here on Patreon. By the way, we're live on Patreon. Thank you for support, Matt. And Matt, his comment is so dear to my heart.
What does he say?
He says, keep with the objective data. I can always test drive and subjectively assess a truck. So I appreciate that you bring what you cannot do during a regular test drive.
Thank you, Matt.
So, Matt, that means a lot to us. That means what we're doing is actually somebody appreciates.
Yeah, that's great. That's the whole idea. I think you encompassed it beautifully. Freezer.
Yeah, freezer. Freezer towing test.
Yeah, and we'll try it next week, even though it's supposed to be 70 degrees. By the way, there's powers out in Boulder.
Yeah.
And I almost got T-boned driving to work today.
Oh, geez.
Because
the lights are not working?
The lights are out, but when the lights are out, usually it goes to a flashing red.
Right.
There was nothing.
Completely nothing.
But still, there's a stoplight there.
Yes.
So, of course, I pulled up to the stoplight, even though it's not flashing or doing anything, and I stop, I look both ways, and I start crossing the street, and the guy coming from my left just blows right through it and almost T-boned me. Like, I came within maybe 3 feet of hitting me.
That's crazy.
Luckily, I had that Bentley with the 12-cylinder, so I floored it. I scoot out of his way. But come on, guys. Even if there's a stop light and the power's out, you still stop. You don't blow through it as if there's what that would just become complete anarchy, right? Then just because there's no light flashing or there's no signal doesn't mean you just go right through the thing. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. All right, let's talk about winners. And I think we're going to have some disagreements here. So we're talking about trucks that have done well or will potentially do well, in our opinion. And then, of course, we're going to talk about trucks that are losers, which did not do so well this year. So you want to start with your list, and then I'll add to it. So start with your list, and we'll talk.
Well, sure. Let's maybe do one winner.
Okay. Let's do all the winners, and we'll do all the losers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I put down the Ram 1500 with the Hurricane engine is a winner because – well, partially because I've had so much experience with this engine this year. Producer Cole and I, we drove a Warlock. That was a V8, wasn't it? Yes. So never mind. But I also drove a Hurricane two-wheel drive truck across the country. We've tested it. A Hurricane truck was participating in our Truck of the Year contest. I did the Ram Rebel 1500 Hurricane review that had 50,000 miles, which is quite a lot of miles for a truck with 1 year. That's 1 year old. And it's a great engine, dude. Super smooth and very powerful.
So to me, the kind of the poster child for the Hurricane, of course, is the RHO.
Yes.
I got to say, Andre, Ford did it 10 years ago.
Well, I got to say something else.
What's that?
Ford did 15 years ago, they introduced the Raptor, right? But, 2017 was when the first EcoBoost Raptor came out, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying Ford did it first, and they did it not just with one engine, but they did it with two, right? They did the 3.5 and the 2.7. So we're talking about basically a twin turbocharged six-cylinder. In this case,
I thought you were talking about the RHO.
Yeah, and I'm talking about the powertrain and the RHO. So, it is a straight six. It is turbocharged. But like I said, it's kind of like something, it's kind of rewarming what Ford did 10 or
but
even longer.
Better because it's more powerful. The RHO has 540 horsepower, which is a lot, which a measly high output EcoBoost is 450 horsepower.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but I think if Ford wanted to, they could crank up the boost.
But they haven't.
But they could.
Ford, where are you?
And they might. So I'm just saying it's a good engine. I completely agree with that. It's some good video there. Is that you?
Yeah.
That's you flying through the through.
Yeah,
the,
I was flying. Alex, our old coworker Alex and I, we were at this event in Michigan. Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
We were flying.
So I think the RHO has been a mild success, but like you said, the reason for it being a mild success, both with the engine and with the powertrain, is that Ford did it a long time ago, and they're kind of copying Ford, and they're in some ways copying themselves too, right? I mean, it's hard to go from a TRX to a RHO when you're going from over 700 horsepower to a mere 500-ish, right? And so I think it didn't create the waves. I think that Ram was hoping because it was meant to be a replacement for, or at least it was perceived to be a replacement for the TRX, but it was down 200 horsepower ish.
And also, it doesn't have the noise that the TRX makes.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's another problem. That's a good point. The Hurricane is very quiet.
Yeah, it's very quiet. It's fairly efficient, and when you're efficient, you're also quiet, right? If you're inefficient, you're loud and you're yelling, and that's what the TRX was. So the RHO. It's a pretty good truck. Actually, Cole and I just drove it in Michigan, another RHO.
Yeah,
that video is coming.
And what did you think, your second take on it? Were you just as impressed?
It was a fully loaded one.
How much?
Do you want to know?
Yeah. How much?
$97,000. Okay.
So basically more than the first TRX we paid for.
Dude, you paid for the company, $77,000
for the first TRX, like 4 years ago.
Yes, and that had a few options on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane and what happened in 5 years.
Now you're paying
$98,000? $97,000-ish for an RHO.
Yeah.
Fully loaded, though.
Yeah.
Fully laden.
Remember this when we disagree on the Honda that we've got coming up. Just remember that, okay?
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
All right. What else is a winner? You get? What else is on your list?
Well, we purchased a truck this year, which is an F-150 Tremor. But the winner is the engine, actually, because the 5-liter Coyote is not new. It's been around for a very long time. But you and I have tested the heck out of this truck. We did MPG loops on the Denver 100. We did towing tests. And it's just a great engine, dude, all around.
So I'm going to disagree again.
What?
I think it's got a great sound. That Verbal is incredible.
Yes.
But for me, it was a disappointment.
What?
I think it's underpowered. Because you think that you're going from a six-cylinder, like a 3.5 liter.
It's because you're spoiled by turbos, Roman.
Right? You think you're going, and you're getting this big old V8. And yet, when you actually start towing with it, it really is working hard. Whereas a 3.5 in the Ford EcoBoost F-150 is just like, hey, no sweat, whereas the Coyote is really working hard, and you can really feel it. So remember we borrowed this trailer in Salt Lake City, and we towed it all the way back.
Yes.
And it was like, how much did that thing weigh? It was like an adventure.
It's like a 7,000.
7,000
pounds.
And I felt like the 5-liter was struggling at times.
It was, because it has to rev up, you know, to make all of its power, right? It's revving really high.
And the other thing that disappointed me is that's the same engine, right, that's in the Mustang?
Yes.
And yet it's detuned by a lot.
It's tuned differently.
Detuned.
Detuned. Yes.
Okay, you could say differently, but it's putting out less power than it does in the Mustang. So in the Mustang, it puts out, oh, I should know this.
490 horsepower.
And
this is 400.
Yeah, so you're basically down 25% from the Mustang. And I don't understand why.
Yes,
can't you have the same power that you have in the Mustang?
I understand why. Because a Mustang will never tow a trailer, and it's a lightweight car. So I think in that case, it's pretty easy for them to kind of get the same reliability out of an engine and actually making it a lot more kind of high RPM power there. And in the truck, you want torque. So I think what they're doing there is they're giving that engine a little bit more torque down low and then also detuning the power so it can last pulling those trailers.
Yeah, I think you're actually exactly right, but it does leave kind of, you know,
you wanting
some money on the table, in this case horsepower on the table.
But I put it here as a winner, and I agree with you. It's working really hard towing a trailer, especially in the mountains. But it kind of surprised me because a V8 in my mind is something that's really thirsty. Right, but actually, this engine's been really good on our MPG testing.
Yeah, I think the EcoBoost is actually thirstier.
Yes,
in real world.
So this Coyote is actually, you know, don't discount it for being like a Tundra V8.
And here's the other interesting thing: I remember reading a stat that about 10% of F-150s come with the Coyote.
How many?
10%.
I think it's closer to like 20%.
It could be.
But
I could be wrong.
But it's not a huge.
It's
percentage.
Not a huge, and I was surprised by that because I remember, maybe it's just a vocal minority of you guys out there all wish you had a V8 because all the comments whenever we test an EcoBoost or, you know, an RHO, it needs a V8. And then for all of the kind of gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, only 2 out of 10 of you buy the actual Coyote, the V8. The rest are getting either the 6-cylinder, the 2.7, the 3.5. You know, I mean, there's a lot of other choices in the Ford lineups. And so it's interesting that it's such a low take rate. It's kind of like stick shift transmissions. Everybody wants a stick shift, but at the end of the day,
nobody buys it.
It's like less than 10% now.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going, Andre. What else do you consider a winner?
Well, you guys have been asking for this. Yep. You know, the viewers and listeners have been asking us to actually put some real weight behind trucks when we accelerate and do some drag racing. And we did that, tow off. So, Cole, maybe you could look up one video at least where we did some heavy-duty tow-off drag racing, which is really hard to do, dude, because we have to have multiple trailers at the same time. And thank goodness, we got pretty lucky and we did it.
No, you guys did great. I mean, you have to get the track. The track doesn't like us doing
heavy vehicles.
Yeah. We have to get matching trailers. And so that was also a heavy lift. So I'm really proud that we were able to do that. I'm proud of you, Andre. Nice work. And that was a really cool video.
Yeah, we did it with heavy-duty trucks. We also repeated it with full-size half-ton trucks. So that was really fun, and we learned a lot. It was really cool.
And hopefully we could do some more TFL tow-offs. Maybe next year focus on the mid-size trucks.
Yep.
Heavy duties would be really hard.
Unless they're all new.
Unless they're
all
new.
And then we'll be forced to.
Yeah. All right. So. I agree. That was a winner of a series, a TFL tow-off. What else you got?
I put down hybrid pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Because, a loser was EV truck. We'll talk about it later. But really, we owned a Maverick this year. That was a winner. I think it was one of our favorite little pickups.
It was
pickups.
My favorite truck of the year. It was my everyday driver. And unfortunately, my mom passed away this year. Earlier at the beginning of the year, and then I had to clean out her place that she had, and I used that little Maverick a lot to haul a lot of stuff, and it was surprisingly
very
easy.
Yeah, very
useful. Because it doesn't have a very tall lift over, right, because it's such a low truck, and it has an incredible payload. If I remember right, 1,400 pounds of payload for a Maverick, that's...
Yeah, more than an RHO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So it was very efficient. It was all-wheel drive hybrid. And also the F-150 hybrid that we recently tested is also quite a good pickup truck for a hybrid. Toyota Tacoma and Tundra hybrids are less of my favorites because they're not super efficient. They're kind of, you know, they're very powerful, but not very efficient.
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher. So most people, I think, at this point, associate hybrids with fuel efficiency. I think that's fair, especially Toyota hybrids.
Yes.
And then for some unbeknownst reason, Toyota decided that in their trucks, instead of making them more fuel efficient using the hybrid system, they're going to make them more powerful. So you think that a hybrid Tundra or a hybrid Tacoma
will get crazy MPGs.
But
right?
It gets like one MPG better than the non-hybrid. And I think that's very confusing in terms of where it's positioned within the brand.
Yeah, I agree. So that's kind of why I called out some of the Ford, because I think Ford is doing it better as far as hybrid and pickup trucks.
And also weird because with the Tacomas, you make this trade-off, which you don't seem to do with the Fords, right? So the trade-off is you're adding a battery, which is heavy, so you're decreasing your payload, and you're increasing your weight, which is bad for fuel economy.
Yes.
And then instead of getting more fuel economy, all you're getting is slightly better power, but it's offset by the weight of the battery and the loss of the payload. So it doesn't seem to be a trade-off worth making when it comes to the hybridization of the Toyota trucks. Those are a little bit of a head-scratcher to me.
But do you want to move to this one?
Sure.
Because you put Tacoma on the list.
I put it as a winner because I think they did what they needed to do to keep it the best-selling truck in the land.
And
mid-size truck, I should say.
And it actually is crazy successful right
now.
Yeah,
they're selling what? How many? 200-plus thousand a year?
I think they're on a record-breaking pace. So I think they may sell more than 250,000 trucks, Tacomas, this year, which is crazy.
Let's just jump quickly to a loser because we're talking about Toyota. I think that Toyota's reputation for reliability took a giant hit this year, especially with the Tundra,
the Tundra engine
recall.
Yeah.
With what happened with our Tacoma, which was very public, unfortunately, but that's what we do, where actually, you know, we broke a front diff by off-roading it. And I think a lot of people in the industry are asking themselves this question, is Toyota making
slipping.
A trade-off in its long-term reliability versus its short-term profits? I think that is a conversation that's kind of quietly happening in the background that maybe hasn't become public yet, but listening to the people in the industry, I'm hearing those questions asked. And when you recall 200,000 Tundras.
And not just recall them, these are engine replacements.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty striking recall.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, time will tell. And the question, of course, that we're asking is, first they recalled 100,000.
Then another almost 100,000.
They still haven't recalled the hybrids.
Right.
And the question is, why would the hybrid engine be any different than the non-hybrid engine? It does have, obviously, electrification, but the engine is basically the same. So the thing I'm wondering is Toyota just slowly rolling or slow rolling the recall because they knew that even the hybrid engines were bad or could potentially go bad, but they didn't want to announce 300,000 or whatever the heck it is in one go. Instead, they're doing it in chunks to kind of try to make it possible to actually make the recall because putting 100,000 new engines in...
That's going to take years.
That's going to take years. And then, you know, if you have to do it for the hybrids as well. I'm not saying they'll have to do it, but I'm just asking that question.
Is that
a shoe that's yet to drop? We don't know.
We don't know. But Toyota wasn't the only one that had a recall this year.
No, Ford. Oh, my God.
Ford broke all the records with number of recalls.
We'll get to that in the losers. Yeah. All right, let's talk about this next one because me and you had a heated argument about it. I put down the Ridgeline and you made fun of me.
As a winner?
Yeah, you taunted me. You said why?
Well, first of all, the Ridgeline wasn't updated this year.
No.
And a Ridgeline, whenever we test one, and actually I like the way it drives, but people make fun of us because they say it's not a real pickup truck because it doesn't have a frame.
So I put it as a winner because this is one of those, is the glass half full or half empty? And I think it's half full. It's just a truck that keeps soldiering on that if you know, you know, people keep buying it. Honda sells about, 30,000 of these every year. It's been around forever. It's very well engineered. It's the truck for non-truck people because basically if you don't look in the rearview mirror and you don't know that it has a bed, you could be driving a Pilot.
Exactly. It's really comfortable. It also is a little bit wider than a Tacoma, right? So, which means there's a lot more elbow space. It's really good.
It's got those magic seats in the back that you can lift up the bottom cushion and throw a bike in there so you don't even have to use a bed. It's got the tailgate that opens up two ways. It flips down and folds out. It has just a lot going for it, and actually so much so that we've asked Honda after you return the current Passport Trail Sport if we can get it for a long-term loan because I think the truck, like I said, is understated, underrated, and one of those quiet trucks that if you know, you know.
Now, Honda, you could make this way better. To make it a true winner.
Supercharging.
No, I don't care about supercharging. First of all, make it a little bit more butch. The front of the Ridgeline looks like a Pilot, an old Pilot. So it looks like an SUV from the front. Also, it doesn't have enough ground clearance. Even on some of their Trail Sport editions, it still doesn't have a lot of ground clearance. So I think they could improve several aspects of this and make it just a true home run.
Yeah.
I was arguing with you. Because I think it's good, but I wasn't sure, you know, I would call it a total winner.
Yeah, I also think that it has great resale, and I also like the price of it. So let's talk about the price. So it starts at $42,000,
Exactly. That's all-wheel drive.
All-wheel drive. Yeah. How much was our Maverick, the hybrid all-wheel drive?
Yeah, that was an XLT. That was 36.
So for another $5,000, $6,000, you end up with a midsize truck instead of a compact truck. You end up with a V6 instead of a four-cylinder, and you end up with a lot more room and a lot more usability. Having said that, the Maverick actually has a surprising amount of room, but the bed is pretty tiny compared to the Ridgeline.
Yeah, I think the base hybrid all-wheel drive Maverick is like 33, 32, right? So for 10 grand more, you are buying the Ridgeline, but I would say Maverick has way better efficiency. Maverick is better in many respects.
I agree. It's more fuel efficient by far, especially if you get the hybrid. It's also more usable if you think that smaller is better. But I think over time, the Maverick feels a little bit, I don't want to say cheap, but there's a lot of cheap plastics. There's a lot of cost cutting that you don't necessarily feel in the Ridgeline. So I think like the Tacoma, the Ridgeline will have a higher resale value. And that's also another sign of a winner because people know that this is a truck that they can hold on to for a long time and then yet not lose their shirt when they go to sell it. And we did kind of lose our shirt on the Maverick, Andre. Maybe that was our stupidity because we sold it back to the dealer. But we basically lost $7,000 in less than in about three quarters of a year. Because we bought it for, 37 and we sold it back for 31, I believe. 38 when you put in all the dealer fees and everything else. So we lost 7,000 in about 7 months, 1,000 a month on the Maverick.
You mean 5,000?
No, 7,000. 6,000.
36 minus 31.
Ours was 37 when it was all said and done.
Including taxes?
Including, like, destination and all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Don, thank you for joining again, Don. Don is here on patreon.com/TFLcar. So, thank you, Don, for... Don had a comment about F-150s. Ford doesn't sell the Coyote, but they are the first of the lots. You say Ford doesn't sell. We said it's about 20%.
I'm not sure they're the first off the lots.
Well, I think...
I don't know if there's a way to measure that. I don't think there's anybody... I've never seen a stat where they measure what engine is the one that is sold first. Let's say you have, you know, the 2.7, the 3.5, the Coyote, and the six-cylinder at the dealership. Which one is the one that's going to get sold first? I would assume that the one that has the highest take rate is the one that's probably going to be sold first just because that's the most popular one.
But or I don't the know one with the highest discount, maybe.
Could be the one. Yeah, that's a good point. Could be the one that's being discounted. I mean, yeah. We bought ours because it was being discounted. It was Ford pricing. It was right after the tariffs hit. So we bought ours for 60. It was 68, and we bought it for 63.
Yeah.
But thank you for that comment. All right, let's keep going. So what's next on our winner? Scout Terra. I put that down.
Scout Terra, yes. Why?
Because it's the right truck at the right time.
So
the Scout Terra...
It doesn't exist yet.
But the Scout Terra is a range-extended vehicle.
Yes.
Scout came out with a truck and an SUV, and you could buy it either as an all-EV or one with a range extender, which is basically... We don't know what the range extender is going to be, but it's basically going to be a vehicle like the BMW i3 where the engine doesn't turn the wheels, but it generates electricity, which charges up the battery, which then turns a motor, which then turns the wheels. And when they came out with it, apparently the story goes that they just kind of at the last minute threw in the range extender, and it turns out that the take rate on the range extender has been like 90%. So 90% of the people don't want the EV, they want that one. And so I think that they've hit the top of the wave just as it was cresting, where people are now deciding that the EV is not for them, but that they want something that gives them good fuel economy, they can tow without having to be recharged every 150 miles or every 100 miles. And I think that the Scout provides that answer. And yes, you're right. It's not going to be here this year, and it's not going to be here next year. But I think it is coming at the right time for a majority of where people are at right now in terms of their electric vehicle choice.
So
that's why I called it a winner.
I gotcha. So Scout, I just listened to one of their podcasts where actually their designer, Chris Benjamin, who's a really cool dude. We used to know him even from Stellantis.
It's a big truck, by the way.
It's also almost F-150 size.
Yes, it's not a small truck.
Cool design. I love the design. But I'm afraid for them because I was listening to another podcast and somebody said that whenever you try to go up against the big three in the pickup truck world, it's almost a losing proposition.
Well, right? they are part of the Volkswagen group, which is bigger than the big three.
Volkswagen is in trouble in a lot of ways.
They
financial trouble, et cetera, et cetera.
But they own like 9 brands.
But when you go up against the Fords, the Chevys, and the Rams of the world in North America, you better bring your A game.
I think they brought their A game.
We don't know yet because it won't even be built for two years.
It doesn't matter. They've introduced it. We've put hands on it. We know what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
What we don't know is pricing. We don't know powertrain.
Pricing is a huge one. Yeah.
But we do know. I mean, it's out there. It's a concept. And it's not a concept by some fly-by-night group. They're hiring thousands of people, I think, in Raleigh-Durham, where they're going to be headquartered. They've got the support of, you know, the Volkswagen Automotive Group, which, you know, builds Lamborghinis and all sorts of other vehicles, Audis, you know, just to name a few. And so this is a real thing. So I think it's a disservice to say that it doesn't exist. It exists. I mean, Volkswagen's putting billions behind it. They've got, Rivian's architecture.
Software architecture.
Which is great.
So
the ingredients are there, and I think it's going to be a winner if they can build it and if they can keep it under, let's say, hard to say because of the economy at that point might be different. But if it was today, I think they'd have to keep it under 60K.
So what will happen?
Coming in at the base model, coming in. I think realistically it's going to be more like 70, but if they can keep it around 60 or 70, then
you... Because they also don't want to compete against Rivian, right? Because they have to come in under Rivian, right? And I think they said they would because that's their goal. So yeah, that's going to be a tough slog.
And the other winner I put in the Ram Rev, the Rex, once again, range extended vehicle, because it's the same thing. It seems like it's the right truck at the right time. Having said that... they keep putting it off, so I don't know what the heck it keeps. They keep pushing the can down the road for some reason. Ram.
So now their website, the Ram's website, says it's going to be available in 2026. So I think they also said maybe first half, but now it's 2026.
Originally, it was supposed to come out this quarter.
Right, and it's not.
It's not. So who knows? I don't know what's going on. I think that Stellantis. It's just so confusing because Stellantis actually does really well in Europe with their electric vehicles, but they really seem to struggle. It's like the two companies. Is it? I always get mixed up. Is it Renault or it's Peugeot, right?
Who?
Stellantis owns Peugeot.
Peugeot, yeah.
Yeah. So they have all, Peugeot builds all these really good electric vehicles in Europe. They've got even a Jeep that's very, very well received. I can't think of the name of it right now. We don't get it. All electric.
Little baby
Jeep. Yeah, little baby Jeep. But they somehow can seem to share that knowledge with Stellantis here in North America because Stellantis here, with any of their electrified products, the Jeep 4xe's, is really struggling with recalls and with, you know, the Wrangler right now, Wrangler 4xe. You can't park in your house because it could start on fire. They're telling people to park it outside. I mean, these are pretty serious issues. Our friend Nicole just bought the Wagoneer S. That was a whole nightmare of a thing that happened to her. She had a...
Yeah, you were talking about the Avenger.
Avenger, Jeep. Yeah, so somehow, like, the electrifying knowledge that Peugeot has not somehow creeped into the engineering team here, and Stellantis is really struggling with it. So I don't know. I think it's the right truck at the right time. I just hope that they
And I'm hoping it's slightly delayed because they want to get it right.
Yeah, that's great.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
And if they do get it right, it could be really, really great.
Because it's the right truck at the right time. And the reason we say that, we should talk about that, because a range extender you can tow with across the country and fill it up at any gas station.
And keep going.
And keep going as opposed to having to stop. Let's be realistic about this. Every 100 miles and charge for an hour, which has been the problem with a lot of electric trucks. And the last one I put down is the Ranger Raptor. I think it's probably the best value in trucks right now. $57,000 for the most capable off-road mid-size truck you could buy. You can argue that maybe the TRD Pro is more capable, or maybe the Canyon Colorado Twins, especially if you go with the AT4X, with the AEV edition, those could be more capable, but those are all $10,000 to $20,000 more, whereas the Ranger Raptor at $57,000 is just a hell of a good truck bargain.
Yeah, I think I'm still sad since
we sold
it. Yeah. I'm still crying a little bit inside.
And that one held its value.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're still very valuable, actually.
Yeah, it could be the Raptor.
Actually, Ford, I don't know if they're not building enough on purpose, you know, but I think they should build more.
They could be doing the Porsche thing and the Lamborghini thing and the Ferrari thing where they're keeping the supply low
because they need to build more of them because people want them and you can't find them anywhere.
So those are our winners. Let's talk about our losers. Oh, there's one more thing I wanted to say on the winners. If you get the Coyote, one of the great things about it is for a mere $11,000, you can add a supercharger to it with a factory warranty at your local Ford dealership and get over 700 horsepower.
A mere
$11,000. But still, that's not bad. So we paid $63 for ours. Let's call it $75. So for $75,000, you can have a 700 horsepower supercharged off-roader if you've got the Tremor version like ours.
Or a street truck.
It doesn't matter
which one. Yeah. You could do both.
Originally the plan for ours was to supercharge it, but the problem with supercharging it is we're going to spend $11,000 on it. We're going to make a couple of videos that are going to make, let's call it a grand, and then we're going to be having to sell the truck, and no one's going to give you that money back when you go to sell it. No one's going to care about the fact, unfortunately, that it's supercharged.
So it's kind of a lose-lose.
It's kind of a lose for us, yeah.
Unless
you keep it.
Yeah, unless you keep it for 10 years.
Yeah, then it's a win-win.
Yeah.
All right, losers, you've got Nissan Armada Nismo. Why'd you call that a loser?
Well, because I really love the Armada.
Yep.
I love the Pro4X.
Yep.
But when they created the Nismo, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So it's kind of got a body kit. So we drag raced it, right? So we took it to our airstrip. Case was there. You were there. We put it up against the Toyota Sequoia, which is a hybrid. And the Nismo wasn't super, super quick. I mean, it's big and heavy. So they're combining a sport element with a giant SUV. It just doesn't make a lot of sense right now.
In my mind, Andre, and I would include the Maverick in this. What's the slammed one?
The Lobo.
The Lobo. I would include any truck that is supposed to be, or any vehicle, let's just go even that, that's supposed to be the performance brand, but they put stickers on, they give it cool colors, they change the body cladding, but they don't touch the powertrain. The heart of it is more power. And how can you create something that doesn't have more power and then
call it high performance?
High performance. That just doesn't compute with.
Well, so the Nismo Armada is supposed to have, you know, the high octane tuning, right? So if you use high octane fuel, it's supposed to give you, you know, a little bit more horsepower.
A great example. Go ahead.
But it's not enough. You know, you saw the QX80 GTR engine at SEMA, right?
Yeah, they stuck that. Now, that was cool.
That was freaking insane.
Yeah, Nismo, you want to make this a serious performer? Stuff a GTR engine like they did for the SEMA show.
Cole, can you pull up that crazy QX80 that Roman saw at SEMA?
Here's a good example of that. Imagine that you've got the CA Corvette and you've got four variants. You've got the Stingray, you've got the Z06, you've got the E-Ray, and you've got the ZR1. Now imagine that if the difference between all those
were
stickers and a body kit, and not going from 500 horsepower to like 700 to 1,000 or ZR1X to 1,200.
Yeah.
That's basically what you got. And here you have what Nissan should have done from the get-go, which is stuff the GTR powertrain. Look at those exhausts, Andre.
That's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah. So I don't get the Nismo Armada.
It also has the body kit, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
It's got the bigger tires, but it all starts with the powertrain. You could put better suspension on. You could put fatter tires. Forward on this video. Look at, there you go. Now that is what you.
Now that's an engine.
That's what you want to see when you when you looked up a Nismo Armada.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what you want to see.
Including the person's name inscripted on the engine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So these guys did it right. All right. What's next? EV trucks, except for Chevy and GMC. Why did you say? Well, we know why you said EV trucks because.
Well, they're out of favor. Ford F-150 Lightning was just announced that they're discontinuing. They're no longer building F-150 Lightnings. But they also said they're going to build a range-extended Lightning soon, but they didn't say when.
Ford took a huge loss on their EV.
Yeah, because they were building big factories. They were building supply chains.
They were factories for batteries, right?
Yeah.
That also never came to fruition. They broke up that partnership that they had with the factory. For batteries. I'm wondering if Ford, there's two things that I'm wondering. First, if they came to a realization that whatever technology they were working on when it came to electrification was just not going to be competitive in the marketplace. Because that's how I kind of feel about the Lightning. The Lightning is the best. I'm going to go on a limb. It's the best F-150 you can buy by far. It's better than the Coyote. It's better than the EcoBoost, and I can support.
It's quiet. It's quick. It's comfortable. It's all those things.
Yeah, it's got onboard power. It just doesn't go very far. It rides better than all the other ones because of the weight and because of the
rear suspension.
It's the best F-150 you can buy by far, and yet because of its range.
And charging network.
And charging speed.
Yes.
The technology isn't there where it should be in terms of where the greatest and newest EV tech is right now. And so maybe Ford came to the realization that the Chinese, because Farley is probably the most outspoken of the major American CEOs, that the Chinese are so far ahead that they can't compete at this level, so why try? Maybe that was a realization. Or maybe they felt, and they've got a lot of people looking into the future of things and where they're going, and maybe they saw the writing on the leaves and they thought that in America we're definitely not going to go electric, so why not focus on what is their core competency? In this case, it's V8s and you know hybrids and such. So maybe that's where that came from. But you're right. I kind of feel like they pulled the plug too early on the F-150 Lightning. I think that if they had kept developing it, there would have been a market that would have.
Well, it's also three and a half years old. And they didn't do anything.
And they didn't refresh it. They kept it the same.
Yeah.
So people just got bored of it.
Except Chevy and GMC, because it seems like Chevy and GMC, they expanded their lineups and they're still doing kind of okay. Except we don't know the numbers after the tax incentives went away. We don't know how they're doing quite yet.
Well, if you're going to tow with an electric truck, those are really the only two.
Because they have huge batteries
yeah, that you could actually.
And
you know, we also forgot this winner. You know what else is a winner? It's the Hummer EV. It surprisingly, at first, there was like a lot of excitement when it first came out. People were all over the moon. And then people decided that it was stupid. And the Cybertruck became the toast of the town. And then people decided that that was stupid. And now kind of the big, brash, bold Hummer EV has come back. And GM quietly kept developing it so that it actually is relatively good off-road. The problem, of course, is it weighs a ton. Well, it weighs 9,000 pounds, which is more than a ton. But the problem is that as an off-road beast, it's got that huge weight issue. But nevertheless, I think it's kind of become cool again, and I think that's why it's a winner, even though it's electric. Right there, it's got a little bit of street cred again.
It's got the swagger. Yeah. Cole and I were just talking about this yesterday when we were in Michigan, because you see a lot of Hummers rolling around. Especially, you know, north of Detroit, but it's so expensive, dude. I mean, we did the carbon edition Hummer recently. It was like $122,000.
Yeah,
I mean, these Chevys are like more like $70,000. So, anyways,
you know what else is a loser or a winner, however you want to look at it. If you're a scammer, the winner is AI, and if you're a loser.
If you're not a loser,
if you're a
consumer,
then AI. I don't know how many times I've seen emails, comments from. I'm guessing it's guys over 60 who ask us when is the Caterpillar pickup truck coming? When is the John Deere pickup truck, the new John Deere pickup truck coming? When is the new El Camino coming? I've seen it. I want to take my money, GM.
Oh, Toyota Stout is here.
The Toyota Stout is here. And none of these trucks exist. There's so much noise out there, and it's generated by, I'm guessing, scammers who decide that the best way to make money is to fake the existence of a John Deere pickup truck that's going to cost $10,000. It's going to have 500,000 pounds of payload, and it's going to be available tomorrow. So go and get them.
Go and buy them.
And buy them. It's all BS, guys. It's all fake. It's all, at least when you see, I made a mistake, Andre. I thought that when we started 15 years ago that we would have developed this reputation for reliability, and honesty, and you know, being on top of the news. But apparently, all it takes is a computer,
AI program, and a
YouTube channel, and an AI program, and you can crap out anything you want out there, and people will believe it. And nobody seems to like understand that maybe you should consider the source, you know, before you go and let's pick a YouTube channel, great new trucks, and then post it on Facebook and send it to all your friends that there's a new Caterpillar truck coming that's going to be a 6x6 that you can buy.
Which doesn't exist.
Yeah, that you can buy, you know, for $14,000.
I don't know. I mean, we try.
We try, but there's such an avalanche of BS.
We keep trying.
And guys, here's something that I learned. I think you learned that we all learned when we were like 10. If it's too good to be true,
it probably is.
It probably is, yeah. So
I want to just mention that Jonathan, he's also in the chat room here. So thank you, Jonathan, for joining. He was just mentioning that the Nismo body kit on the Armada looks kind of silly.
Yeah, it looks like the truck is hiking up its skirt. It does.
It does have a longer skirt.
It does, and it's like it's in the back. It's kind of hiking it up, kind of like you know, like those videos you see on Facebook where women are wearing way too short of skirts for some reason. Well, I know why they're doing it. Of course, it's the same reason people are putting out Caterpillar trucks. All right, let's keep going. Truck recalls. Oh my gosh,
that's been a big loser.
So many recalls. So many.
GM 6.2 engines, heavy-duty GM transmissions, Ford recalls. I think every single pickup truck had a recall.
Yeah. I also think part of it is traditional car companies, say truck companies, are really good at building trucks but really bad at software. So a lot of it has to do with software. They just struggle with coming and building usable software, which is something that Tesla's really good at, by the way. And Rivian as well. But then the rest of it is confusing because we've been building internal combustion engines for over 100 years. Same thing with transmissions. But a lot of this is maybe because we've gone from 6-speed to 10-speed transmissions. And so now there's a lot more complexity. I mean, have you seen the inside of a 6-speed transmission? Can you imagine what a 10-speed looks like?
It looks like a brain, a human brain.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah. And so maybe, and of course, now you're adding electrification and you're adding turbocharging. And so there's a lot more complexity or... in the case of GM, cylinder deactivation, but they've been doing that forever as well. And yet these are all things that are constantly breaking.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is. I mean, you mentioned, you know, maybe corner cutting or corporate profits have to do something with a lot of this. But
doesn't it cost more money? How much is Toyota paying to replace 200,000 Tundra engines?
Ungodly amount of money.
Yeah. And what happened, by the way, and what happens to all those engines once they replace them?
I know.
Do they sit behind the dealership? Do they pile up? Or do they get sold like Copart? What happens to all those? My God.
You know what we should do? We should buy some of those engines for like, what, $5?
Yeah.
And create like coffee tables out of them.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Yeah.
Little coffee table.
They could sell 300,000, 200,000 at this point.
Coffee tables.
So, yeah, recalls. And honestly, Andre, I think it's so many recalls now. Ford is almost at 150. That we're just overwhelmed by them. We don't even report on them anymore because it just feels like there's so much noise out there that you can't keep up with it. And you guys have turned off the volume because there's just so much. It's hard to keep track.
Well, also I'll say this really quick about recalls is some recalls are very minor. Like, sure. Oopsie, we misprinted the sticker.
And right? some are like, don't park your electrics
inside.
Inside, because you may burn down your house.
So there's a variance of significance with those recalls, and also a variance in the number of vehicles, right?
So I have one idea why this is happening, and I'm going to blame you, Tesla. I'm looking at you.
Uh-oh.
Once upon a time, and we used to do this a lot, manufacturers would test the you-know-what out of their vehicles before they would sell them. Now we're seeing manufacturing doing what Tesla does, and that is basically selling beta versions and letting the consumer, in other words, the truck buyer, be the beta tester. So they're basically half-baked vehicles. And you just saw it with Volvo with the EX90 where they actually had to replace like the heart of the car, the computer, because it didn't have enough brain power. And this is expensive stuff, right?
A car to process all this
but
stuff.
But this is the main computer. There's a lot of little small computers. And you're seeing that a lot more where they're just not ready for prime time, and yet here we are beta testing them. All right, let's keep going. INEOS Quartermaster, why is that a loser? That's
well,
on my list.
You put it here.
I'll tell
so
you why.
You answer this.
Because it got hit with the chicken tax, and then they got hit with Trump's tariffs.
Ooh.
So for the longest time, we have not gotten any world commercial vehicles because of the stupid chicken tax, which is a tariff that goes back to the 60s where we tariffed European chickens or they tariffed American chickens and then they responded by tariffing trucks.
It makes
no sense. It's so stupid, Andre.
Yes.
So stupid. And it's a 25% duty on any commercial vehicle. And companies have tried to go, but this truck, which I would love to actually, the reason I put it on there, I'll be honest, Andre, is because we've asked INEOS to give us a long-term loan of one.
Yes.
Maybe we can help them sell some more of them because we do trucks. I think we're the biggest truck YouTube channel in terms of pure reviews. And so we've asked them for it. So I know you guys are getting hit with like a double tariff, making the thing ungodly expensive. How much are they? They're eating like
$25,000. Well, they used to be like $90,000 or $95,000. I think they may be more now.
Yeah, I mean, INEOS is – and they're a big petrochemical company – So I guess they can afford to do it, but still, it's not a business case if you have to eat $25,000 on every truck you import. And there's still a $100,000 truck.
So we were just...
Double tariffed, man.
We were just visiting with our friend Jay, yeah. Jay Couch, and he actually owns one of these. Mm-hmm. And he beats up his trucks very, very hard.
This is the guy who has a bunch of...
He's got a tank trap in his backyard. And he actually really likes the engineering
of Quartermaster?
This thing. So it could be really, really great. It's just losing because of all this...
Double tariff. Yeah, all right.
Slate.
Slate. The reason I put that there is because...
It has two doors.
No, that's that too. But mainly because they initially came out the door saying that it was going to be...
Is it because of the rain?
So that was stupid. That was really bad. They parked the truck in California right next to the road... during the LA Auto Show, so that apparently people were in the bar drinking, whereas the truck is parked out in the rain on a main road. And that was really brave of Tommy to do that review. So we were one of the few to actually do a review of it because that event was so silly. Anyway, the reason I put Slate on it is because they lost the tax incentive. So it was supposed to be a $20,000 all-electric truck, the most affordable truck in the land. And now because of that $7,500 tax credit that went away, it's going to be, I'm guessing, more than $20,000. We don't know
yet. Well, at least 27. Yeah, but we're not quite sure. And it's also two doors.
Also two doors. No two-door sell, but they shouldn't. You know, there's this thing that's going on right now. And you keep seeing it over and over and over again, where companies that don't sell trucks, Andre, think that there's this wealth of customers who don't buy trucks that will buy trucks. So they're ignoring the traditional truck market. They're ignoring Texas and all the people who are buying trucks. And they're like, you know what? We'll get all these people who are buying. And it kind of makes sense, right? They're like, hey, we'll get all these people who are buying SUVs to buy trucks.
Yeah.
But over and over and over, and Rivian has proved this is not the case. You're not going to convert. Instead of selling to truck buyers, you're going to be selling to this other market of people that I think don't exist. And then you ignore the truck buyer. And I know that because when Slate came out, not only did they not invite us, same thing happened with Rivian when they did a program here in Colorado, you know, largest truck YouTube channel. And this is part of my pride speaking, and I completely understand that. But still, it says a lot about the company when they don't invite the people who actually review the thing they're selling. All right, Cybertruck.
Definitely a loser.
Yeah, I mean, probably the biggest loser.
I mean, high hopes. I mean, actually, the Cybertruck pushed...
2 million reservations when it first came out.
2 million reservations.
Two million, and they sold what? Less than 100,000?
Yes.
What happened to all those reservations?
They evaporated. Mm. Yes. Actually, the Cybertruck pushed the F-150 Lightning to exist. It pushed the Silverado EV to exist. I think the Cybertruck pushed a lot of other companies into existence, I mean, to create electric pickup trucks. But now they're just losing.
Yeah, and I like hot take, Andre. I really like the Cybertruck. I was sad to sell it. I think it's actually a really good cyber car. It may not be a Cybertruck. And the engineering behind it is just so smart. It's got things that no other vehicle in its class has. So obviously air suspension, where in its extract mode, you can jack it up to over 14 inches, which is incredible. Steer-by-wire, which is also incredible. Because it allows you to have variable ratio steering. So, your inputs changed based on how fast you're going, which is actually very intuitive once you get used to it. Rear wheel steering, which makes it much more nimble than its size would suggest. I love that tonneau cover that's part of it, where you can use it as, like, my friend Steve flew in and I went to pick him up in this, and it was raining, and you know, they had a lot of luggage, and so we just threw it in the bed and then closed the tonneau cover. It was water resistant. I'm not sure it's waterproof. I did really well. I also like the space. It's a big truck, so there's a lot of room, but of course there were mistakes were made. A lot of I don't want to go through the litany of mistakes.
No.
The biggest mistake that Tesla made is they overpromised and underperformed, right? This was supposed to be a $39,000 truck. How much did we pay for ours?
What
100,000.
Yes.
100,000.
And that was not the most expensive one.
No, there was
the
Cyber Beast, right?
Cyber Beast was
Kyle Ballen, 120,000, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you promise a truck that can beat an F-150 for $39,000.
Yes,
and
that's something.
And then you come out with one that's $100,000 at its cheapest, eventually went down to $80,000. That's a classic example of overpromising and underperforming.
Yeah, and also it looks odd, and it's not the shape is wrong, and the squircle is wrong.
And
okay,
and the build quality was bad.
You put Rivian R1T here.
Mm, yeah,
What's wrong with Rivian R1T?
It looks the same as the old one.
The Gen 2, yes.
Yeah, they haven't changed the look of it whatsoever. And two things, it's incredible off-road. It's got 1,000 horsepower. It's actually one of the best off-road electric trucks you could buy. But the biggest problem in my mind is, one, my neighbor has one, and if I brought the new one home, which I did in the R1S, you couldn't tell the difference. So why would he buy one? I mean, what's the point? It's the same. And two, the off-road one, instead of going like really off-roady where they put stickers on it and make it, you know, like this is a truck that will eat the Baja 1000 for lunch. They made it very stylish, this beautiful interior. And you just feel like, God, I don't want to take this thing off-road, you know. I don't want to get my muddy boots on this beautiful carpet and these beautiful mats. And then, like, the only way that you can tell that you've got the 1,000 horsepower one is it's got this little gear guy.
Yeah.
And it's a little, he's a little like Yeti, and his hair is flowing back. And so there's this little tiny sticker. Imagine, like, if you bought, you know, the ZR, I'm going back to Corvette,
ZR1X,
right? And the only way you could tell it from a Stingray was that there was, like, some guy sprinting. Like, a little tiny, like
a tiny
little
logo.
Guy, 2-inch guy, like, okay, now I've got the 1,200 horsepower one versus the 500 horsepower one. It's like they don't understand, I think, or they seem to think that. I like understated. I like understated, but this is too understated.
Well, it has its own aesthetic, right? It almost reminds me of like Land Rover, Range Rover, right? Very stately, very well.
Yeah, but the Octa, dude. You seen the Octa?
The Octa is butch. It's got the amber lights and all that stuff.
It's got the big wheel
fenders.
Big tires. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, big knobbies. Yeah, it's not that understated.
Yeah,
it's,
that's what the Rivian should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And this one might be a little.
Well, we talked about EV failing.
Yeah.
So we don't have to talk about the Ram EV failing again.
Right,
did fail.
It did fail. So the next one is the Gladiator. Why is that not selling?
First of all, it was way overpriced.
For a long time, yeah.
For a long time. So when Stellantis really took over, right, they jacked up the price of the Gladiator. Insane. I remember they had a special edition Gladiator. I think it was diesel at that point.
It is the only convertible truck, Andre.
Okay.
There's value there, I guess.
Okay. That was $72,000, Roman. So I think people just said, that's enough.
There's a rumor.
We can't.
Isn't there a rumor? They confirmed the rumor. Yeah.
It's still a rumor.
That the 392 is going to be slammed into?
Yeah, there's a big rumor that a 392 V8 Gladiator is coming soon. So that would be, could also be expensive.
Oh, that'll definitely going to be expensive because the 392 Jeeps were expensive, the Wranglers. You think that would inject some life into the Gladiator if you had a big old V8?
Maybe.
Is there a mid-sized truck with a V8? There isn't. It would be the
only one. No.
Yeah,
it could definitely wake it up.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's just not been selling really great.
All right, I put – this is me. You may have other thoughts. I put the Ram 2500 Cummins on – the new Cummins on this list, and the reason I did that is because – for a long time, at least as long as we've been doing this, there's been this war between the truck manufacturers, and it's been all about who's got the most towing, who's got the most horsepower, who's got the most pound per square feet, torque. I was a little disappointed in the Cummins when it came out. I thought that they would have at least matched, if not surpassed, the Ford.
Well, you wanted them to leapfrog.
Yeah, but
right?
They didn't. They didn't even match.
They
didn't even match the maybe we've gotten to the point where you can't because it's already so high. But I remember when Jim Morrison was running Ram. Remember they had the Cummins where we towed.
They were the first to reach 1,000 pound feet.
Yeah, and then we towed like 30,000 pounds with it or something.
Yes, yes.
And now the current Cummins is not all that.
Yeah, I agree to some extent. I mean, they are doing good because they're offering good value, different value options. We recently tested the heavy-duty Warlock, right? But I agree. I mean, they could have done way better. They just need to redesign the entire truck. You know what I'm saying? Because they kept the old cab. They kept the old chassis. You know, the frame is kind of aging. So the GM redid their frames in 2020. Ford redid their stuff in 2017, but Ram is still kind of soldiering on with some of their slightly older tech.
All right, and the last one, because we talked about this one, we don't need to talk about it again. And I put the Santa Cruz on there because I think there was a competition to see which of the compact trucks was a winner in the marketplace. It was the Maverick or the Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz went after the lifestyle folk, right? This was kind of the truck that you go and...
Once again, trying to sell trucks to non-truck folks.
Yeah, the little surf trucks. And then Ford went after the truckie truck. And I think it's clear in terms of sales that the Ford was least
the winner,
the popular way to go. Because how many do they sell a year?
I think they're going to sell 160,000 Mavericks.
And this sells like 30,000-ish, if I'm not
probably
mistaken.
Probably close, maybe 35.
Yeah, so 5-1, 4-1, something like that, Maverick. So I kind of feel like if you're going to go after truck buyers, go after truck buyers. Don't try to expand the market. Just go after the people who are buying trucks.
Yes.
Well, there you have it, guys.
One more word about Ram.
Yeah. There's some
news
coming, isn't
there?
Big news.
Big
Sunday. Sunday. Not this Sunday. What Sunday? Actually, it's not even Sunday. What's the date?
It's Thursday. So, Cole, can you please look up on YouTube Ram Trucks YouTube channel? Ram Trucks?
Now, Andre is under embargo.
Just one word, Ram Trucks.
So I'm not going to ask you too much because there's only...
I know something.
You know a lot, dude. You know a lot. And you're not sharing, but you can't. But
I can't.
But look at this video. This will give you a hint. Yeah, because sand flowing over a sand
dune. It's really windy.
That's really giving us a huge hint of what's coming.
There's a sand dune, and it says power will be reborn on January 1st. Power will be reborn.
On January 1st.
Yes. January 1st, it's an odd day.
I think I saw the Ineos Grenadier quartermaster.
Because I call it the hangover day.
Oh, God.
Is that what you call it?
No, I'm way past that. On.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, here's a little Roman rant.
Yeah.
I find New Year's Eve the most disappointing of all holidays, right? Because there's this huge buildup of what's
sadness.
There's this huge buildup of what's coming. Everybody's all excited. End of the old year, bring in the new year. And it's just so anticlimactic. This little,
shiny ball
falls. And. And then you got a drunk, what's the guy on CNN? What's his name?
Oh, Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, you got
a
drunk Anderson Cooper with the guy from Housewives. It's just so, you know, and then you got some like third string band playing, and then it's inevitably raining in New York. Everybody's wearing 2026 sunglasses. It's the same thing. I've seen it a million times. And by 10 o'clock, I'm bored and I'm asleep. It's so, maybe cold. You go party, you're. He raves. He goes to raves. So that's got to be fun. If you're at a rave, that would be maybe fun, and you're out there like partying and having a good time listening to music. But if you're an old fart like me and you're watching it on TV, there's just not a lot to look forward to on New Year's Eve, except for the fact that you're terrified that if you drive somewhere, some drunk person's going to T-bone you.
Anyways,
and on that note, Andre.
So on January 1st, we're going to kick off the new year in a huge way.
Like by talking about the things that we...
And we will not be hungover, I promise you. Nobody will be hungover.
Because we recorded before then. That's why.
Yes. Okay.
Because if we actually recorded it on the 1st, it might be a different podcast.
Okay.
What are you doing? Do you have any plans?
I'm going skiing.
You're going skiing. There you go.
If there's snow.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's snow.
It's supposed to be 70 on Monday.
So, yeah, we're trying to go skiing to Purgatory. You know, there's a mountain near Durango.
Yeah.
Or Colorado. So, yeah, my family, we're going.
You know, it's all well and good, all these high horsepower trucks until it's 70 in December in Colorado.
Which is unusual.
Which is, not good.
All right, well, thank you for joining us on this episode.
And as always, check out Tommy and this time Case on TFL Car Chat.
We're swapping it all around.
We're swapping it. We're kind of changing things around. Come back next week where we talk about the trucks that we're looking forward to, probably you and Case, that we're looking forward to seeing in 2026.
Yeah,
which one are you? Give them a little hint. Is there one that you're super excited? I was going to say Scout Terra, but you disappointed me, my man. You said this isn't until 2027.
Yeah, it's coming later. Ram. I want to see the range extender.
Yeah.
Ram.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. All right.
Let's talk about it.
We'll see you next time. Ciao.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.